You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hey guys, I'm Chris, and welcome to another episode of Chris Talks Games. Yeah, time again. Keeps on coming really quickly. Lots of stuff to talk about this episode, hopefully. But as the name says, I'm Chris, and I talk about games. So, I think today's episode is going to be kind of like a start of like a multi-episode, probably a couple of episodes long kind of segment looking at multiplayer games in general. So today, maybe look a bit at the history of multiplayer and how it's changed and how the whole thing of playing online seems to have changed. And then look at like, what I think's better. Is it couch co-op and multiplayer? Or is it online multiplayer? Yeah, so I'll have a look at those and see what's good. And then also have some news to cover. And then next episode, I'm hoping to look at party games and multiplayer games. Not entirely 100% sure what the format's going to be for that next time, but hoping to maybe get some guests online. Yeah, have a lot of fun with that, hopefully. But yeah, first up, onto this episode's news. Okay, so news headlines. One massive story that's literally broken in the last couple of days is E3 is no longer happening this year in its usual sense. The SRA, I believe it is, who run it, they have officially announced that due to coronavirus and the stuff going around that, that they will not be holding the traditional E3 event this year. I have to confess, I'm not overly surprised, because even before coronavirus, they were looking quite shaky. Lots of big things, like lots of no-shows. Sony not attending on the year. They're releasing a new console is a massive kind of red herring, or kind of like an indicator that something's not great. And then Jeff Keighley, a guy who's been doing stuff with E3 for literally most of 20 years, turning around saying he wasn't going to go this year because he wasn't a fan of the direction they were taking. That's another big kind of warning sign. And also we had the creative director's quit that happened about a week or two ago at the time of recording. Yeah, they're taking on new creative directors for this year and they left the project. So to say that E3 wasn't having the best year so far is kind of putting it very mildly. It is kind of a big event and I think this could be a defining year for E3. Like, I know now some people online, if you look around, they'd say that E3 might actually recover from this. Because, to be fair, put it bluntly, for a big company like Nintendo or Sony to have a decent stand at E3, it can cost millions of dollars. I don't know, there's only one person I've heard say it, and this is like Spawn Rave on YouTube, but he's saying that it can cost like $5 to $10 million to have a stand at E3 for the 4 or 5 days it's on. Especially if it's a decent sized plot, decent sized stand. So yeah, if you've got companies paying out that much money for a stand at E3, if this year obviously is not happening, if they manage to find they get the same results without spending that kind of money, E3 could find it very difficult to justify why companies should be paying that kind of money next year when it comes around again. They have said they are looking to have like a digital presence. A lot of the companies have said they're looking to do their own kind of presentations and things like that. So I think a lot of the like press events and stuff like that will still happen, or like not necessarily press events, but like the press conferences where they show off and announce new games. I think they'll still happen. Maybe not with live audience as some of them are. Nintendo obviously have their direct still. But it is whether everything will fall in that 1 week. Because one of the great things about E3 is you tend to get everything all together. Like have 3 or 4 days in a row of like company, then company, then company. And like each company kind of had their time slot. So you kind of you'd have that. Whereas this year, they're all doing their own digital stuff. It's whether they decide to release it around the same time. They could release it earlier. They could release it after when E3 is due to be. So yeah, it's whether that would be a thing. E3 has said they're trying to do a kind of online digital event. So it's whether they manage to get any of the developers and publishers to sign up to that or not would be an interesting thing. Kind of idea I had how they could work it, which I don't know whether they would or not, is if they kind of did like an E3 live thing, which is like 5 days of live streams kind of thing, where they had like a host and they had like people from the different game publishers and companies come in, showed off their games to have like a set time to show off whatever games they're showing off. Well, it's a bit how like Nintendo Treehouse kind of works over 3-3, if you ever watched. It's basically like they have people work at Nintendo Treehouse, they basically spend the day talking about different games and like get developers in and show off gameplay, stuff like that. So I think if they do try and go for like a approach like that with like the different developers, maybe that could work. We'll have like Nintendo being one morning talk about like the main projects they're working on and showing off gameplay for those. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they could work it out like that and if they could fit everyone in who they need to, if they could find someone to host it. Because the whole thing's coronavirus and whether people are traveling and stuff like that. But yeah, I think if you get someone who's willing to host it and then maybe get one representative from the game company to go in, it could be workable. It wouldn't really pose as much of a risk as the coronavirus stuff, so so you won't be a big live audience or stuff like that. But yeah, so I think that would be one way they could try and work it, is whether they can get companies to sign up to that. And because I think E3, I think, does tend to be all about the money, because they do get a lot of money from the companies for being on it. So it's whether they could persuade the companies to pay towards it or contribute towards it, which would be interesting. Yeah, that's my thoughts on like how E3 could try and do a digital event. I think it could work. I think get a good host, if they get some good people in, they get a lot of the big companies in to show off their games, I think that would be a pretty awesome way to do it. But it's whether the companies will want to do that, whether they'll be happy doing their own events. And on the subject of digital events, we are moving on to the next news headline, which is Nintendo, basically. The great Nintendo Direct drought continues. I think we are pretty much in the longest period without a Nintendo Direct almost ever, definitely in the Switch era. I'm not ashamed to say I am missing the Nintendo Direct, so it'd be great to have one. There are announcements coming out which you thought would be in a Direct, but then again, maybe not. There are a few different things that have come out in the last week or so. Yeah, so things have been announced is Nintendo have made a couple more partnerships. So they have done a partnership with Levi, like the jeans and clothing company, to do Mario-style clothing. So, like, I believe they are doing dungarees and jumpsuits and stuff like that, and then obviously T-shirts, things like that. Yeah, so that's one announcement they've had. And then a couple of days ago, at the time of recording, they actually had on Mario Day, March 10th, they actually had the announcement that they've partnered with Lego, and they're doing Mario-themed Lego, which looks interesting. Literally just as I was about to start recording this, I have noticed there is a trailer that's gone up for it today, so a bit more info. So I will probably look into that. It'll be interesting to see how they do it, because I think it seems to be interactive in some way. And the way the Lego pieces looked in a concept or picture seems to suggest you might be able to slide your Switch into it or something. So I'm not sure whether that's a true thing or not, but it'd be great to see if they can get some kind of interactivity or kind of like game stuff into it. But yeah, so there are a couple of things that Nintendo announcements have happened in the last couple of weeks. They are also quite heavily rumoured to be some directs coming up, even though it has been a while since the directs and they've like people were expecting one all the way through February, it never happened. There is a rumour that from the event, I think it's SXSC, I think, is like an indie event that was planned for next week. I think there was originally meant to be a big Sega presence there as well, because Sega are now looking to try and do their own event, because I think they had some announcements to make, potentially around a new Sonic game. So yeah, I think they're having to try and put something together to make the new Sonic announcements. Back to the Nintendo stuff. There is quite often quite a heavy indie presence at this trade show that's been cancelled. A lot of people say it probably would be where an indie direct or an indie world presentation would be. So a lot of people are predicting that next week, maybe like the 18th or 19th, there'd be a indie world presentation or like indies direct. And then the following week, on the 26th, potentially a full direct. I think there's a chance of this happening because it is getting to the point where Nintendo do need to tell us what's happening this year, especially with the fact that after the launch of Animal Crossing, we don't have a dated first party Nintendo game coming out on Switch. All we know is Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition's due this year, and that is it. That is the extent of our knowledge of what is coming out from Nintendo for the Switch this year. There's a couple of rumours and estimated guesses, but nothing concrete about dates or what's coming. So yeah, I think Nintendo definitely do need to look at doing that. So I know the news is going on a bit today, but there's a lot to talk about, actually. So next up is a potential leak about some of the hardware in the Xbox Series X. console. And it actually comes from Ninja Theory, one of the development studios that Microsoft has brought. Obviously working on a sequel to Hellblade. So yeah, in an interview they're saying about how development's going on the new systems and stuff like that. And they actually mentioned that they had a separate audio chip for the console. It means they can do a lot more with it. So this is quite big news, because normally audio would be handled by some of the other chips in the chipset, whereas it sounds like Microsoft are getting a separate audio chip, which then means that a lot of the processing power and like the game graphics power of that won't have to be spared for the audio. The chips can just handle the picture rather than having to do everything. So yeah, so it's another piece in the puzzle for the Xbox Series X. Means that the audio could quite well be a step up. Like, they could put more power into the audio, make sure that the audio is more high quality, stuff like that. And yeah, so it's an extra part for the Xbox Series X. And also does keep raising the question of how much it's going to be. So a lot of the parts they're using, a lot of the chips are getting really quite expensive. So there is a lot of queries over whether it could be potentially be a $600 system when it comes out. So that would be easy one of more expensive console launches. And obviously there are the heavy rumours about the Lockhart, which is like the less powerful version, which could launch for a lower price point. But again, it is a lot to consider, a lot to think about, whether it's actually going to happen or not. But yeah, it's interesting little tidbit from Ninja Theory there, saying that they've got a separate audio chip in the Xbox Series X. So yeah, it should mean that they could potentially make the game sound a lot better, as well as look a lot better. So yeah, like I say, lots of things that could affect the price of the console there, so it would be interesting to see what Microsoft does and when they actually do start announcing stuff, because normally would E3 event would be when they do it, but it's whether they decide to do that or whether they decide to move the timeline around. So that'll all be interesting to see. Last little bit of news, bit of a gaming series that's had a bit of a faltering recently, but has been doing alright and is quite well known, is potentially making a comeback, and this is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. A lot of rumours about a new Tony Hawk's game coming. This is primarily due to news that, I think, not entirely sure how it came out, but I think it's on Twitter or something, about a list of, like a band said that some of their music could be licensed for a new Tony Hawk's game coming in 2020. So yeah, it's nothing concrete for definite, but if a band said that they've had music licensed for a game coming this year, certainly seems intriguing. Yeah, I can't remember where it came out. I think, I don't know if it's from the tweet from the management saying about things that have been happening, but should be interesting to see what actually happens there. Whether Tony Hawk's does actually make a comeback or not. The original Tony Hawk's and Tony Hawk's 2 are amazing. I had those back in the day and it was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed those. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they can recapture the magic. I know Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 was a bit rushed, people said, so it wasn't an amazing game. So yeah, hopefully it will come to light and it'll actually be quite a good game. But yeah, that is going to wrap up my news for today. So on to the main section. Okay guys, so now on to the main part of my discussion and podcast today. This is the evolution of multiplayer and going forward, and how multiplayer has changed across the years, and whether online or couch is better, really. So there's a lot of arguments for both. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. So looking back into some of the research for this, one of the first multiplayer games was actually back in 1958, and it was called Tennis for Two. Yeah, so multiplayer definitely isn't a new thing. I didn't really realise that gaming was a thing back then, but I think it was like early prototype stuff. And yeah, that was one of the first multiplayer games. Pretty self-explanatory, I think, to what it was. But yeah, multiplayer has been around in home consoles since the start. Both the Master System and the NES both had multiple controller ports. I'm going to restart my talk of console gaming with the NES and the Mega Drive, or Master System, sorry, and then move forward, because gotta be honest, I wasn't really that knowledgeable about stuff about the Commodore 64, stuff like that. So yeah, two players are standard from the get-go, and then the Mega Drive and the SNES were both still two-player, although I do believe that the SNES were out of multi-tap, where you could plug more additional controllers into. and so that made it out to four players, which is really cool. Especially used for games like Bomberman, Micro Machines, and Mario Kart, things like that. I do remember that I think Micro Machines on this Mega Drive actually had digital controller ports on the cartridge, so it'd be on the cartridge you can plug your game controllers into to make it up to four players, which is really cool. Yeah, 32-bit era rolled around. PlayStation and Saturn were both two players. Still very much all about the couch co-op. Pretty much about the games that we had which were kind of multiplayer. A lot of it was kind of platformers and racing games and fighting games. And then the N64, I think, is where it kind of really got quite big in terms of couch co-op. And that was when they introduced four players. The N64 was the first console to have four control pads or four controller ports. And I think I did really well with it. Obviously, the PlayStation had the multi-tap, again, kind of idea where you plug it in and you can plug additional controllers into. Yeah, I had four controllers on the N64, so you had a lot of games taking advantage of this. You had like GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, you had Mario Kart, Super Smash Bros. The first Super Smash Bros. Came out on the N64. So yeah, it's very much a game breaker in terms of that. Lots of great multiplayer games there. That's where four player on one system came kind of thing. What's quite interesting going forward, you had the Dreamcast and the PlayStation 2, and then a bit later you had the original Xbox come out in that generation, and then after that you had the GameCube. This is where you realised the Dreamcast was a bit of a trailblazer, really. Okay, it wasn't a trailblazer in the fact it had four controller ports, because the N64 done that before it. But the PlayStation 2 only had two controller ports. PlayStation 2 didn't have built-in four-player capabilities. And the Dreamcast is actually the first video game console to come with the modem as standard. A lot of the other things you could get adapters for, things like that. But in terms of being able to go out of the box, the Dreamcast was the first one. The original PlayStation 2 required an adapter that you had to buy and plug in. GameCube had an additional modem you could buy, I believe. And the Xbox did have the ability to plug in an Ethernet cable, so yeah, of the 128-bit era, for want of a better word, you had the Dreamcast and the Xbox were the two that enabled online play. Well, obviously, the Xbox came out after the Dreamcast had kind of moved on, pretty much. But yeah, it's really interesting to think that. And Sega also had Choo Choo Rocket, which was one of the first online-focused console games, I think. The Mega Drive and the Master System did kind of have, well, not Mega Drive and the SNES did have some kind of online stuff, but it didn't really leave Japan and it wasn't very widespread. But yeah, Dreamcast was kind of forged away again. Choo Choo Rocket, which came out, they actually sent it out for free in PAL territories, which is really cool. If you use and subscribe to the Dream Arena kind of network thing they had, they sent you a copy, which is really cool. So I remember back in the day when I had it ordered, because I'd ordered the game through a mail order company. I don't think they're going anymore, can't remember the name of them now. I had a phone call saying that the game was no longer being released. I was like, no, it's been reviewed, it is coming out, it hasn't been cancelled. Because I knew everything, because I was up to date with all the gaming news, because I used to log in after school and just read the gaming news before I did my homework. That's how I found out it was going to be free, through that phone call, that the fact that they weren't releasing it anymore. And then I ended up changing my order to Evolution, which turned out to be quite a good trade, because it's quite a rare game now, which is kind of cool to say I've got in my collection. Yeah, I got my free copy of Choo Choo Rocket come through once the subscriptions went live for it. I remember setting it up and going online and tidying up for it as soon as I could. So yeah, that was the first call. I want to say mainstream online game, but it wasn't really, because it wasn't very mainstream for a start, the fact that they sent it out to people who subscribed to the service. Yeah, it was a really cool game. I really enjoyed Choo Choo Rocket. Worked really well. And that was great, because you could do both couch and online co-op, which is online multiplayer, which is really cool. I think that's kind of where it started changing a bit from, like, the purely couch online to going more online. I think Microsoft have always had a focus on the online stuff, right from the very first Halo. I think one of the big selling points with Halo was the fact it would be online multiplayer. You could play people online. Yeah, the 128-bit era was weird for, like, multiplayer, because obviously the PlayStation 2 had 2 controller ports, whereas all the others had 4. And it's kind of like the online did start to get going in that era. The PS2 Slim added the ability to get online. You know, it's just kind of, that's where it started to change a bit. Couch multiplayer very much was the main way to play, especially on Nintendo and PlayStation systems. Yeah, I think that's when Microsoft especially started to push forward their online stuff, and their Xbox Live started with the original Xbox. So yeah, moving forward onto the 360, PlayStation 3 and Wii era, this is where online gaming really kind of took a step forward. I think in my eyes, this is where kind of like a lot of the moves forward happened. In terms of multiplayer, I think I remember being really surprised to find that a game that I thought would have local multiplayer didn't. It was only literally online. It was actually a 360 game called Anarchy Reigns. It came out on PlayStation 4 as well, but it's by Sega and Platinum. It's kind of like a arena brawler where you four characters battling out. Bayonetta did guest as a character in that, along with Jack from Mad World on the Wii, which is a great game in itself. Yeah, I remember the first EGX I went to, we actually played it. Myself, my friend Matt Miners, and kind of other people we met up with there. You know, she didn't have much of a queue, and it must have been back in like 2011, I think. Yeah, 2011, I think it was, I played it. Yeah, they had like I assumed at the expo that it was just because it was, just because it was kind of like an event, they wanted you to get like the full screen experience kind of thing. They did connect, they had a bank of 4 systems lined up. It was a 4-player match, each person had their own screen. Then you fought out in this arena. It's a lot of fun, really good game. Quite an overlooked game, to be honest. I think it was a lot of fun for what it was. I think it got released at quite a low price, actually, as well. It did get delayed quite heavily, because I think they added a single-player mode in, which I think it did need. Yeah, Anarchy Reigns, I remember getting it, and some of the people we played it with, EJX were around. Let's play it. And we learned one that went through the menu. It was like, where's the multiplayer? And it was literally just online, which really kind of surprised me at the time. I was just like, what? Like, so it would have worked well, I think, in a co-op kind of, or like a couch multiplayer setting. For me, I think couch multiplayer should be an option anywhere, because I don't always play my friends online. Quite often I have a group of friends around, we start playing games here, of mine, so the moment you have to start getting individual consoles set up, especially like Xbox 360, stuff like that. It wasn't just like the Switch where you can just grab it out and play it. Yeah, it was kind of quite a surprise to see that. Yeah, I wish that games did just do couch multiplayer standard. Well, I know it does cost more money and it is more kind of development work and can affect the frame rate, stuff like that. Can affect the processing power and the game's looks and things. So I don't understand why people do. They want to do not do it if they want to make their game look good. But yeah, Anarchy Reigns, as I say, is just the big kind of surprise. Oh, like, why can't you play it online? Well, why can't you play it by yourself, multiplayer? Unfortunately, because the game didn't sell very well, there wasn't much of an online community to actually play the game online. So I don't think that game really reached its true potential in terms of being played online and getting the full experience of the game, which is a really big shame. Yeah, it was a pretty fun game. Some pretty good characters in there. It's kind of weird. I think Nintendo, if anyone, stayed more couch multiplayer than any of the others recently, especially from the Wii, PlayStation 3 and Xbox era onwards. You know, a lot of the games do have like couch multiplayer, but there are a lot of games that you want to play multiplayer, you do have to go online, which is a bit of a shame. But I'm now going to move on to a bit more with multiplayer these days. Yeah, I think the Wii U actually, for me, really changed up the multiplayer format for me. So it added up a lot of different things you could do. Because PlayStation 4 and Xbox One kind of were pretty kind of, didn't change much between PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 in terms of what multiplayer options it kind of provided. I think the Wii U was quite inventive with the multiplayer. Like I said before, when I was talking about Psychonauts All-Stars Racing Transformed, you have an additional 5th player. You'd have the normal 4-player split screen on the TV, and you'd then have on the gamepad, you'd have the 5th player. So you'd have 5 players playing simultaneously, which is really cool, which worked really well. And also, like going back to the Nintendo World game, the way that works so cleverly in adding different stuff in. So what people on the gamepad could see was different to what people on the TV could see. So especially in multiplayer games, you could literally only see kind of part, like if you're on the TV, you can only see a little bit of the split screen. Whereas on the gamepad, you could see the whole map potentially, or you could see a lot of the other stuff. You have like more information or different information, which is really cool. The gamepad really was quite revolutionary for multiplayer, I think. I think another concept which is quite good with that kind of stuff, and it's a game I've actually got on my Switch at the moment, is called Keep Talking and Nobody Dies, I think it's called. It's a really different kind of form of multiplayer. It's a kind of game where the person with the Switch has the bomb on the screen. You have it in handheld, so it's not on the TV. You just have your screen in handheld, and then you print out a kind of instructional manual for the bomb. You then have a basically the person with the Switch would then describe what's on the bomb, like the different puzzles. And the people with the instruction manual then have to look through the instruction manual to work out how to defuse the bomb. And you had like a time limit to do it. And every time you made a mistake, it cut some time off. Yeah, it can be quite pressured, but a lot of fun. It's a very different take on the multiplayer genre. So you can play all in the same room. Just one console required, one controller required. I think it's a really cool way of doing multiplayer. Yeah, I think couch multiplayer is something that is done less and less, I think. Unfortunately, a lot of companies are focused on the online stuff. So yeah, online, I don't know. I think I just kind of miss the personal interaction. Like I say, quite often when I do proper gaming, I have a load of friends around. So I've got a load of friends around, have a game evening, play loads of different games, and have a lot of fun with it. A lot of it is because it's all around one console, all around one screen, and competing and seeing what's going on with each other, and try to beat each other in the room. Was online, okay, you can have voice chat and stuff like that going, but it just kind of, yeah, works well enough. But if you've got a dodgy connection, it can mess it up. Yeah, I don't get the same kind of joy, I don't think, and the same kind of instant reactions of when things happen, stuff like that. One of the bizarre things is when I was playing with Matt from Game Junkies, so it was me and him in one room, and his friend Ben in the other room, and we were literally kind of, there's a wall between us. Instead of just sitting around the same console, we were just playing a game online. It's like, okay. So yeah, it just kind of takes the personalisation, the social aspect out of it, I think, a little bit. Yeah, you do have voice chat and stuff like that you can do. Yeah, it does seem to be a bit kind of, bit of a shame. But yeah, as well, kind of a little talk about multiplayer, it's probably a bit of a ramble and a bit kind of boring, I think. Next episode, we should be a bit more lively because we're going to talk about different multiplayer games and some of my current best multiplayer memories. And I might try and get some of my mates on there to see how that goes on. But yeah, that kind of sums up like the little history of multiplayer gaming. As I do tend to prefer the local multiplayer compared to like couch co-op and couch multiplayer compared to like proper online stuff. So online stuff does work fine when you got friends, when you're not able to meet up with your friends, stuff like that. But I do think you do end up missing some of the interaction. But yeah, we're talking about different games I've been playing recently. I've been playing the Final Fantasy VII demo. That's a lot of fun. Really enjoying that. Looks amazing, but it's amazing how well they've recreated some parts of the original game. That's how the cutscenes and some of the locations look brilliant. The music is fantastic. I really like the music. So yeah, really excited by that. I've been playing a bit more, a touch more Astral Chain, which I'm really enjoying. Really want to try and get a bit further into that, which is really cool. And I have also just started Concrete Genie. It's a game I played at EGX last year on one of my breaks. It's a really charming game, looks amazing. Puzzle platformer adventure style game. So yeah, there's one you can play in VR as well, and it does look really cool in VR. It's really charming, great music, great aesthetic of the game. It's everything worth looking at. And yeah, so they're the main games I've been playing recently. I am still looking to try and get into Ring Fit at some point, so hopefully maybe try to be up tomorrow or at the weekend. So yeah, all good fun. Yeah, don't forget to listen out for the Game Junkies next weekend. The last episode was the second look at the Halo series. Seems to be going down really well, quite a popular episode. So yeah, check them out. They've got a lot of good stuff coming your way. Then all that's left for me to say is, if you want to find me online, got my Twitter at ChrisLewis37. All the podcast links should be on there, and YouTube videos should be on there. And also, I am on YouTube as Chris Reacts. There are loads and loads of Chris Reacts on there, though, so my Twitter probably is the best way to find me. I am, however, considering changing my YouTube channel name to make it easier to find. One that I am considering is Chris Reactor as one word, so I might change it to that, but please do let me know what you think. Do you think Chris Reactor would be a better name? I think it should be a bit easier to find. Yeah, that's where you can find me, stuff like that. Thank you for listening, if you still are. See, I've been waffling on for quite a while now. Anyway, until next time, speak to you soon. Mate.
Is a Matt Attack production for the Visionaries Wrestling Network.